Circuit Court judge, not a jury trial, a very informal situation, that really all you need to perform this function is someone who can look at the reports, pre-commitment investigator can do this, and determine are there witnesses that need to be there to tell the judge this is what they saw and heard relevant to this case. Issue that subpoena and then be there to say, well, what did you see? And how did you see it, and when did it happen, and why, and what? That's really what is necessary. Those are the other thing that the comment I would make. You heard a very forceful presentation against immunity here, and yet I guess I would say that there needs to be some immunity in the system. I've been sued many times by people. Who have mental problems. I get letters every day. I get people at my reception every day. It's a problem. I would encourage the committee to look at that test in its entirety. Right now, there are several sections that deal with a three-prong test: good faith, probable cause, and lack of malice. Those three prongs appear to me to be redundant. Really, what you're talking about is that someone's acting in good faith. As long as they're doing that, they should receive protection. When you start using other words that may mean the same thing, legally, they may adopt new meanings. For instance, probable cause. That's a legal determination. Someone can be acting in total good faith about what they're doing in suggesting this person needs help, and yet they haven't met the probable cause standard. We have police officers getting sued every day. They have a little better idea of what's probable cause for a crime. But now you're talking about lay people and other people who may sign a commitment paper. I think that you should rethink that, and I would suggest a very simplistic test if immunity really is your desire, and just say good faith or something along those lines.
We would support that for all subsections, including 6 and 7 of that area.
That's really something out of my expertise. I think some immunity is necessary, and that's certainly up to the committee's discretion there.
Oh, Representative Dix.
How many people do you end up prosecuting now who would have fallen under the guidelines of this bill and could have been kept from committing a violent crime or a burglary or whatever that you have to end up prosecuting?
Well, we would never prosecute someone for a theft kind of offense, like a burglary or that kind of thing. If we get people in that situation, and what we try to do is we'll immediately try to get a peace officer hold assigned so that this person will enter the civil system. Now, when they have injured someone, like killed someone, when there's been a major injury involved, we will go through the system. And one of our we may look at the case and decide whether or not we think this is a true condition. If it is a true condition, then our goal would be making sure this person is under the control of the PSRB so that there is follow-up, there is treatment, there is protection to the public.
So you don't prosecute them once that...
We do when they've hurt someone, physical injury. If it's the theft kind of situations, the property damage kinds of things, we will try to get them into the civil commitment system, but we don't have any sanctions in our system right now anyway. I don't, it is rare that we would say you go and voluntarily commit yourself and then that will put you on probation, do that kind of thing. I heard that described. I personally haven't seen that a lot, but I can see where it may happen.
So I guess, do you have any idea how many people right now that you end up that are involved in the system at the present time that you end up having to deal with that would fall under the...
I guess what I'm saying is that there are many people that are involved with the police. I don't know that we prosecute all that many that would come in that situation. We try to divert them over to the civil system. The numbers that are involved that actually do physical injury are very small, and I'd have to say certainly less than 20 a year in this county. But there are the people that you've talked about that are always on the fringe. They don't meet the criteria in the statute. They're breaking into buildings to sleep in a warm building, that kind of thing. And if we can, if we think they can meet the civil commitments standard, we would try to get them into that system.
For this community, do you have any idea how much time is taken up by law enforcement officials that have, I would assume there's a weed out process they deal with them initially and before they ever get to you?
I'm sure it's substantial. Again, I couldn't tell you. I know that the mayor of Salem may be testifying at the next hearing, and I know that there's a fiscal impact on the Salem Police Department. It's substantial, but I couldn't give you a dollar amount.
Okay.
Thank you.
What is it in the statute? And I've been reviewing Section 14 that makes you say on page 2 of your testimony, number 6, underlined civil mental hearings must be given priority over criminal cases. I'm just not finding
that. Because what this states is that in Section 14, this is page 11, that's a misprint on my memorandum there. It's sub 4, sub B. Is what we should be talking about. Sub 4, that category says this subsection establishes responsibility for representing the state's interests. And then it has three different alternatives. One of them is the Attorney General's office will be mandated to do this, and they don't receive any funding for this either. On recommitment hearings, someone who's already in the hospital, and the hospital saying they should be recommitted, the Attorney General's office is given that financial burden to attend those hearings. But then, this is on page 12 of the bill, up at the top, in sub B, it says, unless representation is otherwise provided. Well, that otherwise is either the AG's office in recertification hearings, or in sub C, it allows the County Board of Commissioners basically to contract out and go hire an attorney and say, we want you to be our civil commitment attorney. But if the county doesn't take that option, then it becomes my responsibility under sub B. The district attorney shall be, and the cost incurred by a district attorney in this paragraph shall be paid as provided under ORS 426-250. That is, that the county shall pay. Now, my budget is basically a county budget. About 85% of my costs, my deputy district attorney salaries, and all of my office expenses and that type of thing by the way, I after you asked me that question, Mr. Chairman, about the percentages, I did a survey, and it's right at about 80 to 82% is paid by the county statewide, and about 18% is paid by the state of total cost of district attorney offices. You'd asked me when I appeared before,
right.
But
so to remind the committee, 82% of the DAs are paid for on property tax, and the rest comes from state funds.
And so at any rate, it says this is basically a county expense. What that means, given the realities of the present time, is means I don't get any more deputies. It just says I've got to do it with the deputies I've got. And if I don't, what happens is, it says here in paragraph 5 on page 12, that you can go after, it becomes a judgment against the county, and it becomes a judgment against the district attorney, but I will receive notice before the judgment attaches. So, but that's where it is. That's where it's, the penalty section is there.
Representative Bauman, further questions?
I guess it really is, it's your decision still how to prioritize cases. It's just that if you don't appear in a criminal case, I take it you're not.
I don't have a penalty.
Charge.
I don't have a penalty. This mandates that I've got a penalty now, which is legislative policy that civil commitment hearings will have priority over criminal cases, because that's the choice I'm given. Either lose the funding for deputies if I don't appear, or else go there and appear and don't prosecute criminal cases.
Yeah, just trying to be follow up, if I could, positively on this. You had commented that you thought some other office could handle this. You suggested a paralegal or a clerk,
sure,
specially trained.
Sure.
And that seems to be, although the statutory language here is counsel, that seems to be the option that that this bill is recommending, except for the fact that the bill recommends that the person be an attorney rather than paralegal or a clerk.
Yes, yes.
And that's a decision that the county, which pays 82% of your salary anyway, would be making. I guess it sounds to me that the argument that you're posing to the committee is one that the bill draft here has anticipated, and that is why it's made a provision for you to have really this conversation with your county governing body in terms of allocating the cost.
Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm saying is that the practical realities are that that conversation will be, well, that's your job. You better not lose us any county money, because if we lose those state funds, you lose three positions. That's what my county board's going to tell me, or any other district attorney. So you better cover that responsibility. And see, the way it's drafted is sub B says this is the responsibility of the district attorney. That's what it said. It doesn't say the county commission or anybody else. It says the district attorney. And then it says, now the county can bail you out in sub C if they want to go out and hire an attorney to do this stuff, then they'll bail you out. But it's drafted in language, it's my responsibility. The county can bail me out if they want to, but it's my responsibility. And if I don't follow through with that, then funding which supports my program for the county will suffer. And what that really means is that I will lose deputies.
Thank you. I do understand. I do understand,
yeah,
that. A question. There was a Court of Appeals opinion had to do with commitment of a person who whose problem was related to alcohol. Maybe you could help me out, if you recall, on being civilly committed. Does this bill affect that court case in any way? Is that population taken into account in this bill?
I don't think so.
You know what case I'm referring to?
Vaguely, but I'm not remembering it well, so I really can't speak to it well.
Yeah.
But I don't think this would relate to the alcohol offender kind of person.
Thank you
very much.
Nellie Fox Edwards. Good to see you back.
Thank you, sir. I scrubbed real hard this morning before I came down to get the FL-CIO off my Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Nellie Fox Edwards, and I'm president of the Mental Health Association of Metropolitan Portland. I'll be very brief. You can read my testimony. And the basic thing that I have to say is that we do support this bill as a step in the right direction. We want the committee to realize the magnitude of the problems that you're facing. It's a conservative estimate in the United States that 1 out of every 100 persons will suffer some form of mental illness in their life. And I think that's a pretty staggering figure, and that's supposedly conservative. We're going to be sending you a copy of this publication that I hope sincerely that you will read, so that you will understand the magnitude of the problems and what schizophrenia is. As I've become involved in this issue and have become somewhat stumblingly acquainted with what you have to go through, it's a question that I've wrestled with. Schizophrenia and manic depressive is an illness. And why is this illness treated in such a adversarial way? If a person had diabetes or had epilepsy, they wouldn't be shuttled into the criminal justice system. They would be given the medical help they need. And this we see time and time again in the so-called horror stories, that people have had to go to the judicial system to receive their help as opposed to receiving the medical help that they need. That happened in my son's case. This is the reason that has brought me into this field, is because I have a son who is schizophrenic. And so many of the things that have been dealt with here today, I can attest to and have gone through those very same steps and issues. Representative Dix, I think some of the areas that you were leading to, that if they were not helped in the area of mental health, that they would be a burden on other parts of our society. Yes, very definitely so. I can't give you facts and figures, but it just stands to reason, let alone what it does to the systems, but the lack of productivity that these people also cause. They're not being taxpayers when they're in a mental institution or suffering from this disease. So it's a monumental problem. I think that by passing this bill, you'll be taking a step in the right direction, but it's only scratching the surface, and it's something that we in our society is going to have to deal with and face up to in a greater, increasingly greater proportions in the future. I'll answer any questions you like.
Questions for Nellie? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We've completed our sign-up list, except for Charlie Williamson, and I don't see him out here. I think he'll probably be back on the 10th. Is there anyone else here that wishes to add their comments today? If not, we'll close the hearing on House Bill 2324. Committee members, anything? Okay, we're adjourned.